Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman, and Walker. A Florida law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman, and Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. Rambana and Ritchie, immigration attorneys concentrating on complex immigration across the nation from Florida's capital and their mobile office. Self-sponsored green cards, I-9 compliance, and deportation defense. Rambana and Ritchie, on the web at rambana.com. And from Florida State University, a preeminent institution. FSU license plates support scholarships for deserving students who enrich and contribute to our community, the state, and nation. More at fsu.edu/mytag. From the state capitol, WFSU Public Media brings you Capitol Report.
Minors seeking abortions would need parental approval first under a measure moving through the Florida House.
This policy has been ruled unconstitutional by the Florida Supreme Court.
Also tonight, a bill to reform Florida's election system after last year's kerfuffle has received opposition from Democrats who say it further disenfranchises voters. But Leon County's Democratic Supervisor of Elections, Mark Early, says it's not.
We don't see that this disenfranchises voters. What disenfranchises voters is giving them the false perception that they can request the ballot very close to the election through the mail.
We'll also get the latest on the state's growing teacher shortage and bills connected to the climate change issue. I'm Tom Blanigan. It's the third day of the fifth week, the technical midpoint of the Florida legislative session, and this is Capitol Report. A measure that would require minors to receive parental consent before getting an abortion cleared its second House committee today. Sean Mulcahy has that story.
Nearly three dozen people lined up to speak on the bill. Some yelled, others fought back tears.
My name is Laura Munoz, and I'm here to speak in opposition of this bill.
Our first priority must be to keep young people safe, and this legislation would do the
general
opposite.
General rule, parents' consent is required for any medical or surgical intervention, including...
I had an abortion when I was 15 and was lucky enough to get the parental...
You just address the parental consent.
Okay, abortion is destroying this country. I mean, what do you guys interrupt other people when they're not on your...
In the end, Vero Beach Republican Representative Aaron Grawl's bill passed on a 10-6 party line vote.
In order to perform an abortion on a minor, a physician must receive parental consent or an order from a court waiving the parental consent requirement.
Her bill expands the parental notification requirement. That's where a parent must sign a form acknowledging he or she is aware of the procedure. Minors can get a judge to waive that requirement in certain but limited circumstances. Under this measure, anyone under 18 years old would need parental approval. And Democrats like Tampa Representative Fentrese Driscoll worry this bill won't hold up to a precedent set by the state and federal Supreme Courts.
This policy has been ruled unconstitutional by the Florida Supreme Court. Under our constitutional system, the appropriate way to overturn prior precedent is by a constitutional amendment. And in fact, in 2012, the Florida voters rejected such a constitutional amendment that would restrict abortion rights and reject the court's holding regarding that right of privacy.
Lawmakers first tried to require parental consent in 1989, but the state's high court struck down the law. That's largely because the measure lacked a judicial override provision. The court also ruled that the legislature failed to show a lack of compelling state interest. That's a precedent set for all abortion restrictions in Florida. Legislators tried and failed again in 1999. Yet Grawl is confident this version of the bill will hold up to the court's standards.
The state does further a compelling interest here in protecting the immature minor, the integrity of the family, and the fundamental right for parents to raise their children. I believe the case law surrounding those concepts has only become stronger in the last number of years as we realize that the government continues to try and interfere with that relationship.
You know, there's been a lot made about Supreme Court precedent. There's been a lot made about well-written opinions that are thought out. Members, at one point in this country, there was Supreme Court precedent that validated the right for one person to own another.
That's Tampa Republican Representative James Grant.
There was well-established Supreme Court precedent in this school that said people of one race could not go to school with people of another race. And so we're left with the difficult challenge or the question that says, to what end do we put the full faith and credit in a judicial opinion?
Grant says abortions aren't the only way out of pregnancy and suggests strengthening the adoption system and social services. Others, like Democratic Representative Ramon Alexander and Republican Representative Bob Rommel, turn to religion.
So I'm a Christian, and I believe in doing things in a Christ-like manner. And the Christ that I serve, the Jesus that I serve, they hung him to a cross, they stuck nails in his side, they put thorns on his head, and he still looked over to him and he said, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do."
God is the person or that allows people to be pregnant. We have to trust that he knows best. He knows best. And he wouldn't have people being pregnant if he didn't want it to happen.
Grawl is no stranger to pushing abortion restrictions. Last year, she sponsored a bill that would have outlawed a common third trimester procedure. It died in the Senate. As the secretary read the final vote, some in the audience let out cheers.
By your vote, show HB 1335 reported favorably. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Next up.
Outside, others opined about religion and how unfair it was. The bill has one more stop in the House before heading to the floor. Its Senate version hasn't had any movement yet, and it's just one of six abortion bills under consideration this session. I'm Sean Mulcahy.
Florida's elections once again made headlines last year amid several hotly contested races. Now the State House and Senate are pushing bills to change the process for the future. We get that from Blaise Ganey.
Florida has a reputation for bungling elections. 2018 was no different, with reports of thousands of ballots not being counted, along with several other issues being reported.
Specifically, a lot of it stemmed from issues with vote-by-mail ballots and the sheer volume of the vote-by-mail ballots that came in. And we believe that it is a structural issue, the way we were doing vote-by-mail ballots, the timing that they go out, the timing when they come back. Those are things that are easily fixable.
That's Spring Hill Republican Representative Blaise Ngoglia. He's proposing an elections reform bill to fix those problems.
With this bill, we are extending the amount of time for voting overall to about 40 days. So currently, supervisors of elections have the opportunity to mail out vote-by-mail ballots in between, in a window of 28 to 35 days. We are extending that to 40 days. Overseas ballots go out at 45 days.
That will add 5 extra days to the process, making sure citizens using vote-by-mail or overseas ballots get them sooner so they can have more time to return them. There's also another change.
This bill also allows supervisors of elections to canvass those absentee ballots 1 week earlier than previous, moving it from 15 days to 22 days. And the reason why this is important is getting towards the end of an election, you see a bottleneck.
The measure received unanimous approval at its first hearing, but at its next stop received downvotes from all of the sitting Democrats except for one. Ngoglia believes his plan is bipartisan and will allow for more access to voting.
So I know that there has been a little bit of, political gamesmanship when it comes to this bill. But I will tell you that this bill is thoughtful. It addresses a lot of those issues.
The bill also targets curing issues with mail-in ballots by allowing it until 5 p.m. on the second day after an election. In November, United States District Judge Mark Walker ruled Florida's current curing system was being unconstitutionally applied. It only allows voters until 5 p.m. the day before the election. Florida State Association of Supervisor of Elections President Paul Lux says the bill addresses several of the group's priorities and that all 67 supervisors are in support of it.
Other initiatives include allowing more time to canvass vote-by-mail ballots, again, as the chairman has already mentioned, as well as moving the primary election a week earlier, which will allow more time for recounts should they be necessary, something that, as an association, we are still working with the bill sponsor to add to the proposed legislation.
Mark Early, Leon County Supervisor of Elections, spoke about why changing the date for absentee ballots was important.
Many of you are likely unaware that the Post Office, United States Postal Service, has been recommending this change to us and election supervisors and administrators throughout the country for several years. It's because they've closed many of their smaller local mail processing centers.
He says that impacted how fast they could deliver mail.
The standard was 1 to 2 days a delivery turnaround. Now it's gone from 3 to 5. That's the window that they can guarantee that, but they stress to us that when these big mailings are going out, we should factor in 5 days turnaround. So that's why we've got 10 days that we're looking at instead of the six.
Early, a Democrat says he doesn't understand the arguments coming from other Dems who say the bill suppresses voters.
We don't see that this disenfranchises voters. What disenfranchises voters is giving them the false perception that they can request a ballot very close to the election through the mail, receive it in time. Quite often they receive it on election day with the current deadlines, and then they have really no way to get it back to us.
The Senate has bills that are similar but not identical. They must be identical and pass both chambers in order to go to the governor. I'm Blaise Ganey.
A House proposal that would increase a threshold for felony theft charges from $300 to at least $1,000 passed its final committee today, preparing it to go to the House floor for a vote. Efforts to raise the threshold amount for the first time since 1986 have stalled in the legislature in the past. This year's proposal has steadily moved forward in the House, as criminal justice reform advocates say there is momentum to pass such measures. Yet past arguments against the proposal have reemerged during this year's legislative session, as demonstrated during a House Judiciary Committee debate today. The state's largest cellular phone providers and some retailers like Publix are opposing the bill. Legislation scheduled to be discussed by the full Florida House of Representatives that would allow some Florida teachers to carry guns in classrooms was temporarily postponed at the beginning of today's session. The school safety legislation contains several ideas that try to bolster school safety, but the most controversial proposal would expand a school guardian program and allow trained teachers to be armed. Hundreds of students from across Florida were at the Capitol today, voicing their opposition to the bill before finding out it had been postponed. Bill sponsor Jennifer Sullivan says teachers who volunteer for the program will undergo more than 100 hours of training, adding that the goal of the legislation is to stop a major incident at a school before it becomes another massacre. It's unclear when the bill will be brought up by the full House. A similar measure in the Senate has one more committee stop prior to being heard by the full chamber there. Still to come on Capitol Report, budget talks are underway in both House and Senate, but the magical middle remains elusive.
I'm sure wherever you look in the budget, you will see that going one way or another, but there are points where one chamber likely is not going to budge.
Climate change isn't exactly a pressing priority during this legislative session. Even so, a few lawmakers are keeping the pressure on their colleagues to do something.
If we don't start showing that we're getting in front of this, that we have a plan, that we know what we're doing, the economy is going to respond in kind and it won't be friendly to us.
Florida's making it easier for people to become teachers.
For years, we've had a teacher shortage in our state, and we hear from districts all the time that it's difficult to find certified teachers.
And lawmakers hope to balance property rights with community preferences.
You know, people really do value the importance of the beautiful trees that they have, not just in their own home, but in their neighborhood.
Support for Capital Report is provided by The Able Trust, dedicated to connecting businesses and workers with disabilities. Businesses are encouraged to recruit, interview, and hire talented and loyal Floridians with disabilities as they seek to broaden their customer base and reach all of Florida's diverse population. AbleTrust.org.
Here we are at the midpoint of the session, the very day when half of it is in front of us and half of it is behind us. And that means we better start working on money matters at the Capitol. And Ryan Daly has been following those money matters in both the House and the Senate today. So what happened, Ryan? Where are these guys going with the budget?
I think you saw a lot more cohesion on the Senate side of things today, which passed their budget at to the tune of $90.3 billion. To cheers immediately after the budget passing. What you see in that chamber is a bit more of a robust budget than on the House side, which did not pass its budget today. It rolled that vote until potentially tomorrow. You might see them pass the budget.
Major bones of contention yet to be worked out, though, Ryan. What is happening there between the House and the Senate? What seems to be a big sticking point?
Well, I think what you're seeing being held up in the House, and maybe one major reason they didn't get that final vote today, is affordable housing. There's a pretty fiery debate going on in the House as far as affordable housing spending. The House is proposing $123 million in affordable housing programs, but much of that is targeted toward Hurricane Michael affected areas. And you're hearing from some of the Central Florida representatives who have a bone to pick with there not being affordable housing funds included in that budget that's targeted for their districts, for their home districts in Orlando and these Central Florida areas. So, you know, that right now is something that's a real, that's a big holdup. And you heard, like I said, some interesting debate there on the House side today.
Now, once you have a House budget locked in and a full floor vote on that, and the Senate does the same thing, they're still going to be apart somewhat, and then they have to go through a process of, what, working out the differences between the two spending plans?
I'll use the example of higher education spending. The House is trying to spend slightly less in higher education in this budget. The Senate, on the other hand, at least in the college system, is looking at a $38 million increase in operating funds. So you take that as an example. Representative Randy Fine, who is the House chair for higher ed spending, he was saying that his chamber is very confident in their higher ed budget that they're putting forward, and he hopes that the Senate will come to their side. I'm sure wherever you look in the budget, you will see that going one way or another, but there are points where one chamber likely is not going to budge.
And that is where we get into some of the really interesting back and forth during the final weeks and days of session as we try to bring these packages together and bring the entire session in for a landing. We'll be watching it throughout that process as they try to bring everything together. Ryan Daly, thanks so much.
Thanks a lot.
As the legislative session continues in the Florida Capitol, advocates question if lawmakers are putting climate change at the forefront of issues. Kevin Del Orbe reports.
The House and Senate filed 3,400 bills this legislative session. Those pertaining to climate change are in the minority. Miami Senator Jose Javier Rodriguez is one of the few lawmakers calling for more attention to the issue. The Miami Democrat is known for wearing rain boots to session every day, with hashtag #ActionClimateFlorida handwritten across them.
The idea really was, again, coming from this frustration that it just did not seem to be a priority. For all but a few of us, it was really sort of just something that was maybe of interest, but it wasn't something that people seemed to campaign on. People had any sense of urgency here at the Capitol.
Rodriguez has filed five bills addressing sea level rise, renewable energy standards, and disaster resilience. Only one bill passed its first committee. Senate Bill 78, aimed at mandating a sea level impact analysis before new state-funded coastal construction projects. The Miami senator doesn't blame politics for the lack of movement. He blames the potential price tag.
Many of my colleagues in leadership are just intimidated by the problem. They think that there's a gigantic price tag associated with starting to talk about climate change.
Changes to the state's infrastructure, like converting to solar energy, building seawalls to combat sea level rise, and emission cutting can get pricey. But Rodriguez believes these investments will help Florida's economic future in the long run.
When we look at the reinsurance markets, right, which ultimately drive how much we pay in insurance premiums, what is and isn't insurable. When we look at credit markets, right, which determine how much we have to pay for things, ultimately, we're being watched as a state. And the reality is, if we don't start showing that we're getting in front of this, that we have a plan, that we know what we're doing, the economy is going to respond in kind and it won't be friendly to us.
Still, observers believe Florida is taking a step forward. Governor Ron DeSantis recently appointed University of Florida's Thomas Frazier to the newly created position of Chief Science Officer.
I'm honored to become part of a team that places a premium on science and recognizes the importance of the foundation
or its foundation for environmental policies and management actions needed to restore and safeguard the natural resources on which we all depend.
Fraser says the focus of his position is water management, not climate change. But the issue is being talked about on a national level. Former governor and now U.S. Senator Rick Scott now says climate change is real. Fellow Senator Marco Rubio has done the same. And North Florida Congressman Matt Gaetz recently rolled out his Green Real Deal as a Republican climate change alternative to the Democrats' Green New Deal. The most recent federally funded national climate assessment finds Florida's natural systems are most at risk from severe weather and rising sea levels and will be completely transformed by the end of the century. I'm Kevin DeLorbe.
Florida lawmakers hope to fill a teaching shortage by making it easier for people to become teachers. And we get that story from Lynn Hatter.
Republican Representative Ralph Mazzullo notes in recent years, school districts and administrators have raised concerns over the difficulty of finding teachers and keeping them.
We've had a teacher shortage in our state, and we hear from districts all the time that it's difficult to find certified teachers.
A report by the Florida Department of Education released earlier this year shows there are more than 3,200 vacancies, about 2% of the state's teaching workforce. Republican Representative Byron Donalds has a plan to address those issues.
House Bill 7061 is a bill dealing with teacher preparation and teacher certification.
Donalds' bill gives aspiring teachers more time to pass the state's general knowledge test. That's one of the tests teachers have to pass in order to be eligible for a teaching certificate. The bill also waives the test for teachers who go through a district mentorship program.
Under the proposed changes in the law, the general knowledge test, there will be an extension 2-3 years to be able to pass that test. But also, if teachers within the school district completed a mentorship program, then they would essentially be exempted from the general knowledge test.
The measure addresses both brand new teachers that may struggle on the test and professionals who may be working in other fields but are moving into education. Yet, while the bill has cleared both its House committee hearings unanimously, not everyone believes granting waivers to the test is the best move. The Tampa Bay Times notes reservations by State Teachers Union President Frederick Ingram, Foundation for Florida's Future Patricia Levesque, and former Education Commissioner Pam Stewart. According to an analysis of the bill, about 60% of test takers passed the exam on the first try. Still, more have pointed to other hurdles for holding on to teachers, like pay. Florida is among the lowest paying states. I'm Len Hatter.
Gina Jordan hits the expected highlights coming up at the Capitol.
Here's what's happening tomorrow in the Florida legislature. A bill to enact a constitutional amendment allowing certain felons to vote gets a hearing in the House. It orders the Department of State to implement a process to authenticate voter eligibility. It spells out procedures to follow if the state determines an applicant is not eligible because of a felony conviction. Playing the Florida lottery is fine in paper form, but a proposal prohibits the use of personal electronic devices for purchasing, playing, and selling lottery tickets or games. Lottery ads must also warn players that gambling can be addictive. Vulnerable investors may soon get added legal protections. Dealers or investment advisors would be able to delay a transaction or a disbursement of funds if they reasonably believe that financial exploitation is occurring. In the Senate, driverless vehicles are back. A fully autonomous vehicle could operate on Florida roads, regardless of whether a human operator is inside the vehicle. The bill provides for uniformity of laws and prohibits local governments from imposing any requirements regarding automated driving systems. The definition of crime may be expanded. The change is proposed for the purpose of providing assistance to victims of lewd or lascivious conduct. Diapers and certain incontinence products may soon be exempt from sales tax, and a proposal would create a foster children's bill of rights. That's some of what's coming up tomorrow at the Capitol. I'm Gina Jordan.
You're listening to Capitol Report from WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally tonight, lawmakers say residents should have a chance to trim and take down damaged trees before hurricanes do. And we get that from Regan McCarthy.
When a hurricane is heading for Florida, Bartow Republican Senator Ben Albritton says residents ought to be able to take the steps needed to prepare their property without getting tangled in governmental red tape.
The idea really is around their residents to be able to trim trees if there's a storm coming, right? If there's clear evidence, declaration of emergency, those types of things, tropical storm warning, to be able to trim trees, you know, essentially provide for safety for anything they believe would be putting their particular property or people at risk of injury or damage.
Albritton has a bill that puts limits on local government tree trimming and removal ordinances during declared states of emergency or severe weather events. But Miami Republican Senator Anna Terry Flores says Albritton's bill might be broader than he intended.
While the issuing of a declared state of emergency is something that we think doesn't happen often, how many in the audience know that the state is currently under several states of emergency? So we are kind of always under a state of emergency. So I know that sponsor didn't want to do that, just have trees being cut down every day.
During a hearing on the bill in the Senate Community Affairs Committee, Flores offered an amendment that made several changes to Albritton's bill.
So we've now made it very clear that this should be something that homeowners should be doing prior to hurricane season, right? So between March 1st and June 1st, so you know hurricane season is coming, in the same way that we prepare for hurricane season by making sure that we have batteries and bottled water, we should always also go out and take a look at our foliage outside.
Flores says it's important to strike a balance between the rights of property owners and the rights of the rest of the community.
You know, people really do value the importance of the beautiful trees that they have, not just in their own home, but in their neighborhood. And so what we have to try and find is that balance between your private personal property rights and how do those balance with other people's property rights as well.
Flores's amendment also specified that homeowners would not be allowed to remove mangroves and that patriarch and heritage trees could be trimmed for the health and safety of the tree, but not removed. Fort Lauderdale Democratic Senator Gary Farmer says he thinks it's important to keep a specific time frame for when the tree trimming would be allowed.
You know, having people out there trimming trees and the resulting debris left from trimming trees when we're in a storm alert could probably create other safety concerns.
Albritton says he thinks the bill and the changes from Flores are an example of the legislative process working at its best.
Ever thought about mangroves? Right? I mean, this today is the absolute quintessential example of how this system is supposed to work, right? You take a diverse group of people that have the same interest in doing what is right, and you come up with a different product.
A similar bill in the House is coming up for its second committee hearing Thursday. I'm Regan McCarthy.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Ryan Daly, Blaise Gainey, Lynn Hatter, Gina Jordan, Regan McCarthy, and Sean Mulcahy. Thanks also to Kevin Del Orbe. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Be sure to join us again every weeknight throughout the Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Capitol Report is a production of WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee. For more information about Capitol Report and to hear previous episodes, visit WFSU.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman, and Walker. A Florida law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman & Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. Rambana & Ritchie, immigration attorneys concentrating on complex immigration across the nation from Florida's capital and their mobile office. Self-sponsored green cards, I-9 compliance, and deportation defense. Rambana & Ritchie, on the web at rambana.com. And from Florida State University, a preeminent institution. FSU license plates support scholarships for deserving students who enrich and contribute to our community, the state, and nation. More at fsu.edu/mytag.